1-1 from Spores. In the air out to deep right field. Calhoun goes back, turns around. We are tied! Teoscar Hernandez with a game-tying three-run homer. The Blue Jays are all the way back. They are back in a big way. They're back on the scoreboard, and they are back home. Rogers Center rises with this comeback. And a game-tying three-run home run by Teoscar Hernandez.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to At the Letters, brought to you by Miller Lite, the original light beer. Ben Nicholson-Smith here with you. I just got home from covering this weekend series back in Toronto. Great to have the Blue Jays back here. A couple years where the openers were far from home. Far better to have them here in Toronto, and they played pretty well overall. I mean, the game I just covered did not go according to plan. Ryu sharp through a few innings, then lost his command in the fourth inning. The bullpen didn't help out. So, you know, they end up losing that one, but they take two of three. Clearly some questions there with some of the relievers. Some questions with Ryu too. I mean, it was never going to be answered in one start, the direction of his 2022 season and where that leads to, but clearly a disappointing start for him. But you've got some positives. I mean, the offense just looks unbelievable. You've got Vlad Jr. hitting home runs 467 feet into center field. You've got Matt Chapman hitting home runs. Teoscar Hernandez, the big home run on Friday that you just heard. I mean, it's really an incredible offense. They're going to do so much damage offensively. So, you know, big picture, to be 2-1 coming out of that opening series, it's not a bad place to be. So from here, they head to New York City. They're going to play the Yankees in the Bronx for four games. Arden, who's obviously not with me on this part of the podcast, will be in New York City covering the team there. So look for his coverage everywhere that you follow the Jays. And we'll have a podcast where we get to catch up on the Jays and how they're doing in a couple days here. So certainly that's on the way. We've also got the over-unders coming your way. I've had fans asking, fans of the podcast, fans down at the ballpark, people are excited for the over-unders. So are we. It's obviously a staple, and that's coming your way. But today, we've got a podcast featuring Alek Manoah, obviously the breakout star from last year in this Blue Jays rotation, and someone who I think Jays fans got to know a little bit. But in this interview, you get the chance to know him a little bit more. The excitement for his season and the Blue Jays season is really palpable in this interview. I think Arden and I could both feel it as we sat down in Dunedin, Florida to record this interview, and the emotion too. I mean, he was really authentic with us with some of the tougher moments he's experienced in his career and his life. So it was an interview for me that stood out, that took a lot away from it, and hopefully you do as well. So without anything more, I'll send it over to the interview that we recorded in Dunedin, Florida. Arden, myself, and Alek Manoah sitting down to chat baseball and life.
Alek, man, tell us about gym ownership. How is that going?
It's good. Yeah. My brother's doing a great job there, and it's just a good atmosphere, good energy. It's a good part of Miami, so it gets nice and hot.
Can I join? Can anybody join? Yeah. Is it open, taking new memberships?
For sure, yeah. Different times of the day, we got different people. Like the athlete group will be somewhere from like 11 to 2 or 3, and then all other hours are open for everybody else.
So Arden gets the other hours.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He'll be in there at either 6 a.m. or 8 p.m.
What's the biggest aggravation with gym ownership? People not putting their stuff away, chasing people down for fees?
I think it's mostly, yeah, like the memberships, like guys not like renewing, or like, hey, it's that time of the month. Like, I remember my brother was telling me, we had one guy who was like, hey, like, you know, that time of the month or whatever, like, just make sure when you come in, you renew the monthly membership, you know, next week or whatever. And I'm not renewing. Thanks. Oh. It's like you work with a guy for 3 months and then he's just not renewing. Thanks. Like, that's stuff like that could be a little painful.
No doubt. Yeah. So, you know, I remember talking to you at the time that it was kind of starting up, and obviously there was a lot of excitement then. How have things shifted, and how hands-on are you with it these days?
I'm not too hands-on. It's mostly my brother. That's more of his thing, like training guys and things like that, writing, you know, the workouts and all that stuff. So for me, it's just helping, you know, to keep a competitive spirit in there, get some good athletes in there, and just create a really good environment for guys to want to work in, you know?
People don't realize your brother basically taught you to pitch in a way.
A little bit. Yeah. And I would say like also like watching a lot of like, it, you know, him making mistakes, like me learning from those as well, you know, just being the younger brother, just trying to, you know, watch and learn and things like that. Like, okay, I think, you know, I should do that or, all right, I might not want to do that. Like things like that.
Was he throwing with you this off season? Is he still?
Yeah. We train every off season. He's my main throwing partner.
Has he still got it?
Yeah, still got it. He's with the Nationals now, and hopefully he can start in AA and work his way up. I mean, he's got a nasty changeup and heater, and he's got a bulldog mentality, so we just got to put it all together.
So this time last year, you had not yet made your Major League debut, and obviously a lot has happened since then. When you look back at last year, does anything stand out? I mean, I'm sure, you know, a lot of the people watching this have a lot of memories of you already, but what stands out for you?
I think just everything in general, having 6 minor league starts going into last year's spring training, and half of those were just like 1 inning or 2 inning, like just a build up that summer with Vancouver, and then getting the camp here and, you know, having a really good camp, pitching really well on the alternate side, and like there was no room for error, you know, like the doors were opening, but it was like slithering open, and like you got to go strike out 10 and just stay right here.
Yeah,
you know, and I feel like me personally, like if, you know, you have one bad outing or, you know, things like that, like, you know, front office can definitely look down and like, hold on, he's only got 6 minor league starts, like maybe he's not ready yet or things like that, you know. So I think just being able to attack every little opportunity that I got and just being able to have no room for error and blessed by God to just be able to stay healthy and do the right things and just follow those little doors. Every time they cracked open, just, all right, sneak through there. And every time it cracked open, all right, sneak through there, make a AAA roster and, you know, then first out and, you know, do really good and just to try and stay on that path, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing. Like, you know, obviously the debut was really awesome. Pitching in Fenway was a crazy experience. Pitching in Toronto after 2 years of, you know, the team not being there was electric. You know, the fans were exciting. So I just think everything last year, like from coming into spring training, like guys probably weren't even thinking about me helping the big league team that year. And then going and being able to be one of the main parts of the rotation down a playoff run was really cool for me.
And you definitely had like outings that didn't go your way. They just came at the big league level, right? Like,
exactly.
How did you learn to process with that? Like, was that an experience?
Well, the good thing is like, you know, like you have the bad ones and you kind of understand like, all right, well, that's not who I am, you know? So being able to have some really good ones is kind of like gives you the confidence where when you have a bad one, it's like, okay, that's not who I am. Why was I pitching like that, you know? And I'll remember it, like going into New York and pitching really well, and then the next start against the Marlins, like, I mean, 2 completely different teams as well. Like the Yankees are AL East front runner, you know, to be in the playoffs, things like that. Like the Marlins were kind of on the other side of things, you know, so going in against them, you know, it was more of like, okay, well, don't throw Jazz Chisholm a fastball because he turned DeGrom's 100-mile-an-hour fastball around, or don't throw Aguilar or Heater in, or like certain things like that. And then you go out and give up a home run to Chisholm on a changeup instead of the fastball.
0-1 pitch hit in the air to left field. Gurriel going back, looking up. This ball is gone. An opposite field home run for Jazz Chisholm.
And Aguilar on a changeup instead of a fastball.
And they've got a big ballpark in Miami, and it's a pitcher's ballpark for sure. That ball is hit hard and down the line. If it's fair, it's gone. Another home run. Jesus Aguilar hits his 10th home run of the season. That's the 3rd home run Manoah has given up in this game.
So for me, like, that game, like, allowed me to learn, like, you know what? It's the big leagues, but at the same time, my stuff is good. We got to go out there and trust it. And if I get beat, it's going to be on my good stuff, not trying to stay away from guys' strengths, you know? And I think as the season went, like, I was able to kind of, obviously all year I was learning and experiencing different things and going through different things and learning at the big league level, which is pretty crazy, you know? But to be surrounded by the guys that we had, it felt like it kind of kept me, you know, like, all right, do this or do that. And but don't stray away from your strengths, you know?
But did you still have those thoughts at that time, like you were saying, of like the windows only open a little crack, and if I missed up, I might be going back to AAA? Were you still thinking that?
Well, yeah, that was after the Marlins start. I was like, you know, then you start to doubt yourself, like, was the debut a fluke or, you know, things like that. And you get back to the drawing board and you're like, all right, get all those negative thoughts away. That's, you know, it's just one bad game. We pitch to hitters' weaknesses instead of pitching to my strengths. Let's just go compete, you know, keep that competitive level up. And, you know, if you get sent down, then hey, whatever, you know, it is what it is, but you just got to go out here and attack and make sure if you're going to get beat, it's with your strengths, you know. And that was going into the White Sox, Chicago. And I went out there and I didn't have my best stuff either, but it was really good lineup, having to compete, you know, with everything you got against those guys. And you're in Chicago or the South Side, like that stadium gets pretty electric as well, you know. And I remember, I think I went either 5 or 6 innings that day, finished with like some traffic on the bases, but finished with like a couple of big punch outs.
2-2, swing and a miss, elevating the fastball. Manoa strikes out Grandal.
Yeah, at 6'6 and 260, Alek Manoah shouldn't have any issues with fatigue. He's a big, strong kid.
2-1 White Sox, bottom five, and a swing and a miss. 95-mile-an-hour fastball for a big second out with a runner still stuck at third.
It was a close ball game, like 1-0, 2-1, and we were going up against Lance Lynn. And Charlie came up to me when I was done, and he said that competitiveness belongs in the big leagues. He was like, you got the heart to be in the big leagues. And then from there on out, I was like, all right, we can breathe a little bit. Like, I think I bought some time up here. And then that kind of just taught me as well. Like, you know, it's the big leagues. Not everybody shows up every day with their best stuff. But what needs to be consistent is that energy level, that competitiveness and that fire, you know? And that's something I bring to the table every day. So for me, it was like, all right, the way to earn these guys' trust is to go out there and give my all every day. And they're not going to judge me if the changeup's not moving or the slider's not what it is. Like, but they're going to judge you if you go out there and you don't give it all you got, you know? So from there on out, I just knew, you know, just trust the stuff, attack, compete, and we'll be all right.
That's so fascinating to hear, because like that competitiveness that Charlie's talking about, that's what we all see, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's really impressive how confident you are at the big league level, but you are processing self-doubt as well, just like the rest of us,
of course,
like everybody, like, and learning how to process that at the highest level for a good team.
Yeah.
It's trying to make the postseason where like you have a bad outing, and that is really impactful.
No, for sure. And I feel like, you know, it could be called self-doubt, but at the same time, it's just accountability. You know, and then I think that's what keeps me getting better every day, is I never get to a point where I'm like, oh, I'm the thing, you know, I'm the shit. Like,
yeah.
I never get to that point where you're like, you know, I'm the best. I don't need to learn. I don't need to get better. Like, no matter how good of a year I have, like, I'm going into the off season, like, trying to pick up on different things, trying to learn from the guys that we got here. You know, it's, of course, there's always like that self-doubt in the beginning and new things, like, you know, but I think it's just accountability on, I don't want to be that guy I was against the Marlins. Like, I need to get better. It's not just, oh, it was a bad start, let me keep going. And I think that's what helps you grow and continue to learn and build. And this game is such a hard game, man. It's the only game I've ever created to succeed less. You know, like every other game, like, you know, 70% passer rating or 70% free throw and high, or, you know, like us, it's like 30% is good.
Yeah.
You know, like going 3-for-10 is really good,
yeah.
You know? So it's like the only game made to succeed less, you know, but if you get too down on the failures, then you're going to be stuck down there, you know, but definitely looking in the mirror and holding yourself accountable and understanding like, that's not me. I want to be better. And even when you have a good game, like I still did some things there that I need to be better with, you know?
So, you know, of course for players in any sport, the mental side of things is big. And what you're talking about there, it sounds like you've put some thought into this. Is this something that you've built up yourself? Or have you gotten this from conversations with family members, teammates? Where does that come from for you?
I think it's just everything. God has thrown me in a pretty crazy experiences in my life. Just growing up, dealing with life issues, it kind of gives you the bigger picture on things, you know? And when you're working on being a better human, working on being a better baseball player is a lot easier, you know? So I feel like going to college, you know, had opportunity to sign out of high school and things like that. But the focus was never on either the money or things like that. It was about being a better human, going and being a better person, being a better baseball player. Like, I know at the end of the day, like, I'm going to be in the big leagues. You know, like, that was never a doubt. I dreamed of it as a kid. Like, I vividly saw these things as a kid. Like, I never dreamed of me striking out in a big moment. I always dreamed of me hitting a home run in a big moment. Like, I feel like God just positioned me to, like, this is going to be your end goal. Just don't worry about these little things now. Just work through them, work through them, work through them. And when you're ready to go, you're going to be ready to go, you know? So I just feel like dealing with life things, going to college, you know, a huge culture shock at West Virginia from Miami, you know, dealing with things there, being away from family there, like, just learning how to grow up as a man and learn, you know, little things in life and then use them in baseball. And then use those same characteristics, you know, in baseball as well, like survival, you know, you got to compete in life, you know, so I got to go compete on the field. So it's kind of like the same thing, you know, that mental toughness kind of comes from understanding, you know, I think the bigger picture and having that mentality.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear you say that in your dreams as a kid, you were hitting a home run, not what I would have guessed. I would have thought maybe a strikeout or something, but, so as you're kind of imagining that, you said that there really wasn't doubt. You really believed that you were going to be a major leaguer. And that's interesting because a lot of kids might think that, but probably not the reality. But for you, that was the case.
Yeah, you got to have that dream. You know, you have to believe it. Dreams are free, man. That's what I tell people all the time. Like, dreams are free. Why not go chase them? You know, you can have them for free, but go chase them, you know. And life is what you make out of it, you know. And for me, that's just something that, you know, I didn't always have everything I needed, you know, as a kid, but I always, in the, like, it, very weird, like, in the back of my mind, I knew I would always have what I needed, you know, like, whatever I had was enough. And I always knew, like, I wanted, you know, more, whatever. And I just trusted in the process, trusted in God's path, and understood that, you know, it might not be here now, but it'll come. It's all right. Just keep working. It'll come, you know, not having any scholarships until my senior year of high school. It's like, it's okay. We're still going to play in the big leagues. I know I'm a first rounder. Wow. Like, I used to say it all the time. Like, I know I'm a first round. No offers. You'd think I'm crazy.
Yeah.
And then I go and they offer me $300,000 out of high school. And coming from, you know, single mom, like, seeing her grind, doing all that stuff. Like, my brother signed for $300,000 for purposes of helping the family. And I literally remember looking at my mom like, mom, this isn't life changing. I can change our lives. Just give me a few years. Like, I guarantee you, like, this isn't the path for me. And she was like, just follow your heart. Like, don't make any decisions for me or whatever the case may be. Like, just go follow your heart. And I ended up, you know, at West Virginia, and first couple of years, it wasn't looking, you know, too promising. Like, yeah, I had some opportunities and had some good starts here and there, some good outings, but nothing of what we thought it would, you know, what it turned out to be, you know? So I just feel like it was just a lot of like, but it was just like, once you put it together, it's going to be a lot of this. Yeah. And then it was just like a lot of that. And then finally I found it, and we've kind of just been able to ride that roller coaster up this whole time.
And you had to have that mindset through not the most privileged upbringing. Mm-hmm. You watched your mom make a lot of sacrifices, right? I mean, she was feeding you and your brother before she was feeding herself a lot of the time. And then you have to look her in the eye and say, I'm turning down $300,000.
Yeah.
That's got to be a really difficult moment.
Yep. But I always told her, I said, I'm going to be a first rounder.
Yeah.
And this isn't it. I was like, this isn't it. And she, you know, I had some people like, you made the wrong decision. You know, I remember, you know, like, there was some close people around my family, like uncles and stuff. Like, you should, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
You know, are you sure about this? Yeah. Like, and I'm like, you'll see, don't worry, you'll see. And now we talk about it. It's like, hey,
you see,
remember, you know, so those kinds of things happen, man. And I think, you know, you kind of just put all your faith in God and you kind of just take a jump off that ledge and you're like, you got to catch me, you know, I'm going to do everything I can, but I need you to catch me there at the bottom. And it was, you know, his time is perfect, man. Right when I needed it, it was right there. I was putting it all together and he, like I said, he opened those doors and I was ready for him, you know.
It has to be challenging to have that mindset, just the way you grew up, to maintain it, right? And to keep it. What were the most challenging moments for you growing up?
Just going to West Virginia, you kind of, like for me, it was getting out of Miami a little bit, going, getting a culture shock, meeting new people, meeting, having different experiences. And from where I came, like just going to a D1 university, that's a that's a win. You know, even if I ended up back at home working, whatever, that would have been, you know, I played D1 baseball, you know, for 3-4 years, whatever. I have a degree. Like, so I just feel like coming from where I came from and reaching like different heights, it's easy to like look back and forget what you're doing, why you're doing it, you know, and who you're doing it for. And being at West Virginia and having good experiences and things like that, and even having bad experiences, for me, it was like, I'm still right where I need to be. You know, this isn't enough. This is just a part of the process, a part of the plan. Continue to just go work and get better every day, you know? So I think that's the biggest thing, is like not forgetting, you know, even when you do have a little bit of success, not forgetting where you're from, why you got there, how you got there, and just working to continue to make that little kid that you once were, you know, super excited to be where you are now, you know?
So as a kid, you tell yourself, I'm going to be a big leaguer. Here you are. You told yourself you were going to be a first rounder. You did that. So mm-hmm. clearly you are good at achieving the goals that you've set for yourself. Now that you're in the major leagues, I mean, what are your goals? What's next? Because it seems like you have a track record.
It seems like whatever I say is going to happen, yeah, right?
Exactly.
We're going to win 5 World Series. No, man. I just, being in the big leagues is obviously a dream come true. You know, God has put me in an amazing position, you know, and then last year to be able to go on a great run, like first year in the big leagues, you're going on a playoff run with a team, you know, guys making history, breaking records, Simeon, Vlad, Bo, like, you know, so I just think, you know, the sky's the limit. Being from where I'm from and being able to get here, like, you wouldn't even believe it, you know, like I wouldn't even believe it. And sometimes when I wake up in the morning, you know, nice bed, you know, comfortable living situation, I'm like, God is good, man. You know, every morning I just, God is good, you know. So I think he's put me in this position in the big leagues to do some great things, not just on the field, off the field in the community for kids like how I grew up. So I think, you know, sky's the limit, man. There's a lot of accolades out there that I'm striving for, you know, winning a Cy Young, winning World Series. Like, those are all things my competitive nature, like, needs to achieve, you know. So being able to go at it and attack those things every day, that in itself is a blessing for me. And, you know, if they happen, then I'm going to be super excited about it. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm winning a Cy Young.
Man, I think about your debut in the Manoa section at Yankee Stadium. Like, it was a party.
Yeah.
Man, it was incredible. You had to be aware of it on the mound. Did you picture that moment too? Because that was so cool.
Man, that moment wasn't just for me. Like, yeah, you know, like everybody there, like, went through a situation with me, like with my family, like it was all my family, like friends, like they've seen some crazy shit, yeah, you know, like, yeah. And then they're sitting in Yankee Stadium and I'm striking out Aaron Judge, like.
And you know, now Alec Manoa's out there looking and saying, man, I made this guy fall down. So this is going to give him even more confidence. And Judge, with a big, mighty swing, just lost his balance and fell to a knee. But it's a great matchup, isn't it?
Here's the 3-2, and he got him. Look at that swing, how late Judge was. Might have been sitting slider, and Manoa strikes out Judge.
Boy, that was a beautiful pitch right there. He had thrown him a good slider that was called a ball, and Judge with a very late swing. I mean, this is the ultimate emergency hack right here from Aaron Judge. I mean, that ball is in McGuire's glove. By the time the Judge swings at it, he had to be looking for that slider.
How else are you going to react but go crazy and you're yelling? Like, I got videos from like my grandma and friends, like videotaping the section, like in the section, videotaping the section. Like, you see a strike, and it's like, oh my God. You know, and like,
dude, the section was the show. It wasn't you, man. It was the section.
No, for sure. You know, and like going back and watching those videos, like, man, I cry. I get emotional about it, you know, because not many people from where I come from step on a big league mound, you know. And my brother texted me the day before my debut, and he said, if you don't accomplish anything else in the big leagues and you just throw one pitch tomorrow, I'm proud of you. Like, Manoa got on the big league mound. That's forever going to be in history. You're one of 20,000 players that have ever done it.
Yeah.
He's like, I know that's not what you want to hear, but he's like, just know that if that's what this ends up to be, everyone is super proud of you, bro. Then being able to see that section and how electric they were getting, and like that was years of emotion, like just like whew, like my mom sitting at 7 year old travel ball games, waking me up at 6 a.m. driving me, or you know, doing a ton of stuff, like sending me with a coach on the weekend because she had to work or whatever the case may be. Like that was 20 years of all that built up, like, wow, you know, and it's just one game. Like looking back now, like I plan on having a great career, you know, but going into that game, it was like, if this is the last one, like we're good with that, you know, like it is what it is, you know? And for my mom, it was like, she'll never forget that moment because like for us, like, it's like, you don't know how long good things are going to last. We've had so much negative things happen in life. It's like, enjoy the good ones, you know, don't take them for granted. So it's like, that moment was just huge for everybody.
Well, yeah, every person there contributed to you being on that mound and had their part to play. Did that text from your brother, did that make you more nervous or less nervous for the debut?
It's really weird. Like going into that start, I was not nervous at all. Like everything was stacked against me, man. Like, like 8 minor league starts, 9 minor league starts, you know, 6 of them were Vancouver, 3 in AAA. the team's on a 6-game losing streak.
Yeah.
We're going into the Mecca.
Yep.
You know, like my whole family's coming up. Like, I got nothing to lose here, man.
I'm
like,
nervous just hearing you say you this stuff saying? Right
but,
now.
But think
man.
About it, like all that stuff. And it's like, I came from, at one point, me and my brother and my mom were sleeping on an air mattress in my grandma's 1-bedroom apartment. Like, that was a real thing that really happened in my life. And now you're looking at 8 years later, I'm pitching in Yankee Stadium in the Mecca. There's no way God put me here to fail. There's no way. Like even if I suck every other start, I know this one's going to be good. You know, that was kind of the mindset going in. And I think, you know, that's why it kind of went the way it went, man. Like that day was wrote out a long time ago. It was meant to be a good day, you know?
It's not a soft entry point to the majors. And guys who had seen you in spring too, right? It wasn't like you were catching anybody off guard.
Yeah,
like,
no, they saw me twice. Yeah.
They knew what you were going to try to do though.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you felt really free that day.
Completely free. We're playing with house money at that point.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember the first game got canceled. And I remember throwing in the outfield that day, the day that it got canceled. I'm looking around and the sun is shining. Like there ain't no rain coming. Right? And I'm looking around and I'm like, there's only one reason you cancel a game, you know, on a guy's debut. It's like, we know you lost sleep last night. Go lose sleep again tomorrow night.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, I'm not losing no sleep, man. This was supposed to be a good day, you know? So I remember that day, like there was a rain on. I was like, whatever. It'll happen tomorrow. You know, it'll be all right. Whereas most guys, I think, would have been like, man, I just wanted to get this one out of the way today, you know, and let's just get to the next one, you know?
Because some players certainly do experience nerves making a major league debut. It's totally understandable. So did that ever get to you or did you just kind of skip it? You know,
like, no, there was none of it. Like, I remember I sat in the clubhouse in Yankee Stadium and I got my music on. Like, I'm getting excited, but I'm like, why don't I have those nervous, you know, weird like butterflies? Like, I've literally worked my whole life. Like, just to throw one pitch in the big leagues would be a huge success, you know? And I'm not getting none of those nerves. And the moment LeMahieu steps in the box, all of them.
Yeah.
All at once. Oh, no. All at once. And I can't find the zone. Four pitches. No. Boom, 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 boom. And I remember getting the ball back from Reese. And I was like, hey, you better lock it in right here because I don't want to go to AAA tomorrow. And I looked at Bo and I was like, all right, let's play some baseball now. Turn a double play here. You know, like I started getting my pitching rhythm and things like that. And I was able to strike out Odor, but I remember like that whole time, like I was thinking like, why am I not nervous? Like, all right, whatever. Like, this is God. Like, he just wants me to go be free and easy. Like, trust what he has written out from, you know, my life. You know, like this is supposed to happen. Like, my whole family grew up Yankee fans growing up. You know what I'm saying? Like,
wow.
Now I'm debuting in Yankee Stadium. Like, my grandma wanted to wear a Yankees jersey so bad. Like, she'd never been to the new Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
You know, but she's out there in a Blue Jays jersey yelling for, you know, like, super ironic how everything just played out. And then I get on the mound, LeMahieu's up there like freaking batting champion. And I start getting nervous. I'm like, sinker over here. I'm like, oh man, just throw it down the middle over here. Oh man. And then finally, like I just was able to, like after those four, like I breathed and I was like, all right, we need to compete now. Like, this is not fun in games. Like, I don't want to be in AAA tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, we got to go to work, you know?
You just had your first big league spread. You're right. Like, am I getting back on that bus tomorrow?
Like, Yankee Stadium spread is really good too. So it's like, you get that spread and it's like, I want this forever.
So what then was the most challenging moment for you last season? Like, was there a moment where you had to really battle and had to get past something?
Yeah, I would say that stretch towards the end, September, was I was getting into like really uncharted territory. Like, through 108 innings or 110 innings in college, and then went in through 17 at Vancouver. So the most that year I had thrown was 127 innings, you know, or 130 innings. We're getting into September, and if you count spring training and the alternate site, I mean, I was here in the alternate site. I would argue it's a lot tougher to throw in the alternate site than it is in real game action, where you have the adrenaline, the competitiveness. You know, you're going and locking it in against the same dudes, literally same lineup for 5 weeks straight.
You know each other too well.
Right. Five innings. Like, you're grinding those because you know this guy is waiting for that sinker in, or he's sitting on that slider, whatever the case may be, you know? So you're throwing five innings, six innings towards the end. And then AAA, 6-6-6. So if you add all that up, you know, I had 25 innings at the alt site plus 18. So that's 43 innings plus the 111 I threw in the big leagues. You know, we're looking at over 150 something innings. That's 30 innings over what I had thrown. So in that September run, I'm already where I was that college season, like 130-ish. And now I'm like, all right, now the body, you know, like, sleep on a shoulder, neck is cramping up, you know, like, little things start adding up. It's like, mentally, you're 5 months into a season. You're only used to being 5 months, 4 months into a season, you know? So I think that was the hardest thing for me. Like, there's the hardest part of the year. The team needs you. The team needs to go win ball games. Like, we need to lock it in. This isn't the time to hang it up and, hey, we had a good year, I'm at an innings limit, let's call it a day, you know? And I was able to go 4-0 and pitch some really big innings and really big games. So for me, that's where I learned the most from myself, is, you know, I've been through some stuff, and then going through that last year, it's like, I can do some things. Like, I can take my body to some different environments than it's ever been to, and I can succeed in those environments. So for me, that going through that and being stretched out and being able to stay healthy and learn different things in a routine to stay healthy at that point of the year and things like that. Like, those lessons taught me a lot there during that stretch.
No doubt. And so I guess coming out of that and into your first offseason post, you know, being in the major leagues, what did that kind of recovery look like? I mean, we've seen your Instagram has lots of good meals that you were eating. Certainly that seemed to be a part of it, as you would expect. Mm-hmm. But how did you try to recuperate and rebuild that strength?
A lot of ice baths.
Yeah. Nice.
A lot of ice baths. I usually don't sleep a lot. Like, I don't like to sleep.
Really?
Yeah. I'm in bed like at 9. I'm up at like 5 a.m., like 6 a.m. Like, I need to get going. Like, if I lay in bed too long, like, but this offseason, I was like, we're going to lay in bed. Like, the body needs to just relax and lay in bed. Like, a lot of mindful, like, breathing, you know, and just staying calm, like, in bed. Like, because even if you're not sleeping, as long as your body's in a restful position, like, it's getting rest, you know? So spent some time in West Virginia, like, just enjoying the nature, enjoying the mountains a little bit, and kind of just reflect on the whole year, put your mind in a really safe spot, safe position, a lot of peace, and then just make sure that when it's time to ramp up again, like, we can get this rest back. So we really have to focus on the rest, you know, the food, the sleep, the hydration, you know, all this. You can sit in an ice bath for hours now, whereas in season, you know, you got to get going, you know? So, like, the ice baths are good, but you don't want to lock up your muscles either, you know? So I just feel like that early part of the off season was complete, like, rest. Mm-hmm. Just everything I did was, like, just rest. The mind needed a rest as well, you know, like, city to city, like, things like that, like, going down a stretch where every game matters, like, high intense moments. You just feel like everything, like, life's going really fast, you know? So just being able to step back, take care of your mentals, slow life down a little bit, and prepare for it to be really fast again, and be ready for that when it happens, you know? That's what we love, you know, the competing and all that. But I really focused on the recovery month and a half of just straight rest. Whereas other off seasons, I would try and do that for 2-3 weeks, and then it's like, all right, I got to go ride a bike, or I gotta go, you know, run, or I gotta get into the weight. Like, I gotta do something, you know. Like, I'm sitting around too long.
I'm relating to the sleep part. For me, 5 a.m. it's like wide awake. I gotta be working. I gotta do something. I'm wasting time. I'm not working. Yeah. Like, is that the same thing for you?
No, 100%. Like, even in the off season, like 5-6 a.m. like, I'll be signing baseball cards or like whatever. Like, you know, kind of like an old man. Like, it gets 9-10 p.m. I'm like, I'm tired.
Time to go to bed.
You know.
In those moments at 5 a.m., I'll get up, I'll go do the dishes, just so, like, just to do something productive.
It's just it's a quiet time.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people are sleeping and things like that. So just having some quiet time where you're not missing out on anything, but you're quiet, you know, and your phone's not ringing yet or anything like that, you know, so you're kind of just at peace. I feel like it's important, you know, and then once you get to 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock, like, you know, most guys then are waking up and things like that. And now it feels like, you know, 10 a.m. for me, and I'm like getting into that workout completely ready to go and things like that, completely ready to go, like not half asleep or anything like that, you know?
Yeah. So I do want to ask you about the food stuff a bit, because you definitely post and it seems like something you really enjoy.
Yeah.
So what were some of the meals that stood out to you most in the course of the off season, or even here at spring? Like, what are some of your go-tos?
So Rue has a ton of like Korean barbecue spots like all over the world, but he's never like been able to find one in Miami. So like for me, I was like, all right, let me go try and find like a Korean barbecue in Miami. We ended up finding this Korean steakhouse, which they do like the meats and the grill in front of you and stuff like that. But it wasn't as traditional, but it was the best we could find. Nice. So we kind of went there a good amount. I love sushi. I think Vancouver kind of spoiled me.
Oh, I bet.
With really good sushi. So sushi, poke bowls, and then just cooking a lot too. My girlfriend loves to cook. I love to cook. And so like just trying like different things. Like she likes to make like poke bowls at home, or, you know, for breakfast, she'll do like the avocado toast spread. Like, I don't know. You know how girls are. Yeah. They try to make everything look really pretty and things like that. So letting her get it, you know, a little adventurous with the foods and things like that. And yeah, just, you know, trying to try different things and different cultures and things like that is always pretty cool for me.
It does feel like you and Ryu have a bit of a competition in season of like, what's the most like ostentatious thing we can find? What's the most over the top like meal we can find?
It's
in this
definitely
city?
Him.
Is that, that's
he can find some crazy stuff, man. And like, I'm eating like chicken skin one time, like this cold soup. I'm like, bro, soup's not supposed to have ice in it, you know? And it's like, the ice are like these purplish colors. I'm like, what is that? And it's just like different fish in it and all this. I'm like, I'm out on that one. That one, that, you know, most of the time he's like, just try it. Just try it. I'm like, I'm not even, like the noodles are gray, bro. Like I've never seen gray noodles before. Like I don't want no part of that. He did show me like a hard-boiled egg, right? Like you cut it in half. Cucumber on top with like sriracha. I had tried that the other day and I was like, man, what is that? It's like a bunch of like hot, cold, like then a hard-boiled egg, like just weird all at once, but it's really good.
A little salt on that would be all right, you know.
He's got some little weird things he throws together and you're like, what are you doing over there?
That's an interesting one.
You talk about how fortunate you've been, man, like to be with this organization, even to get to this point, and then to end up with like a guy like that to kind of be a mentor for you as you get used to the big leagues. Like that's got to be huge for you to be able to learn from him every day.
No, huge. I mean, he's done a lot of things that, you know, I aspire, you know, to do. He's played in playoff games. He's started the All-Star game. He's been in Cy Young, you know, votings for, what, the past 5 years, top three in Cy Young voting the past two out of the past three seasons. And he's an inspiration for a bunch of people from Korea, you know. I think there's, you know, him and what's the other guy?
Shin-Soo Choo?
Shin-Soo Choo, it's like they're the two legends from Korea, you know. Yeah. But there's not a ton, you know, so I kind of see it like the same way, like from where I come from, like, Miami has, it's a hotbed for baseball. But from Homestead, there's not a whole ton of like professional athletes, things like that, you know? So like the things he does in the community, like the way people see him as a role model, things like that, like just being able to see how he handles everything on his plate and then going out there and handling the other plate, you know, the baseball part, and doing that to a T, having a crazy good routine, being consistent with it and all that, like just being able to kind of watch everything that he does, how he handles it. Like you said, man, has been super fortunate just being able to experience that.
People don't appreciate what he went through last year.
Yeah.
Being away from his kid, like the grind of that season on him, not feeling his best when he's on the mound.
And you don't even notice it. You know, like that's the crazy part. Like he had his daughter was 8 months, you know, I think at the, you know, or a year old at the end of last year. And you think about him, like, like he left home when she was what, 2 months old and didn't see her. Like she's going, you know, that she's going through a lot of phases. Like you want to be there for that. Like you want her where you're at. Like she can't be there. Like things like that, you know? So then you're not having your best stuff on the mound either, you know, and you still have to go out there and compete and you're not feeling good, you know, neck or whatever the case, like you're in uncharted territory as well. Like he's 35 years old throwing, you know, into his 32nd start or whatever that he was in.
Yeah.
Like there was a lot of things going on, man. And a lot of guys, you know, a lot of people talk like, is Rue going to bounce back? Like it was a 4-3 ERA.
Yeah,
you know, like it's not like he went out there with a 6, you know, yeah. Like he might've had a few bad starts, you know, towards the end of the year, but we're just so used to him being so good, you know, and him being so, you know, that when things kind of, everything's not there, it's like, whoa, you know, it's like this guy competed through a lot of crazy things last year where guys probably would have, you know, been on an injured list most of the year or would have, you know, not been able to handle it, would have had a 6-year ERA, would have been talking to the media complaining about, you know, well, my family's at home or, you know, like this guy, like just language barrier, no language barrier, stayed in his path, like didn't complain to nobody on the team, like nothing. And we know he was going through a lot of things too, you know, so we're excited to see the kind of bounce back he's going to have this year.
For sure. And that kind of leads me to my last question here, at least for me. 2022, a huge season for you, for yourself, for the whole team. What are you most looking forward to about it?
What am I most looking forward to? I think when we sit at the end of the year, I'm looking forward to seeing where we're at, you know, because I think the team knows, like nobody talks about, okay, let's get into a playoff or like, we know how good we are. We know how good we could be. But we don't want to talk about it. We want to go out there and just win ball games. You know, we just want to go win ball games. So I think I'm just looking forward to that flight home or whatever after the season's done, and not going to say how I think it's going to end or whatever, but I'm excited to be able to reflect on and go, wow, that was pretty crazy of a year, you know?
The restaurant bill, if you guys do get there, the meal you guys are going to have. I just want to see it on your Instagram. That's all. I know I won't be there personally, sure. But
that,
I want to see it.
Just know that I'm not going to be paying, hopefully.
You're pre-ARP. You haven't got some years yet before.
Another good reason to have you around, yeah, man,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I paid for one last year. Like it was the end of the year. I mean, this guy's taking me to all these restaurants, yeah. Like paying for me and all this stuff. And like, I felt bad. I'm like, man, I don't want to be like a mooch or like, you know, and he wasn't taking it like that at all. He's like, this is my little brother. Like he would take out 10 guys and he's got the bill, you know, like he's just a very generous guy like that. And I tried to pay the last one of the year. Like we went to this Korean barbecue place that we go all the time in Toronto. And we went after the last game or whatever. And like, we're eating whatever. And he went to the bathroom. I went to the lady and I was like, hey, I'm going to pay this time. She was like, Manoa, you, yeah. And I was like, don't tell him anything. She's like, okay. And it's like, in his tradition, it's not okay for the little brother to, you know, to like, it's a disrespect, you know? And I kind of knew what I was getting into, but I was like, man, like, it's, you know, it's the last one. Like, let me show my respect to him, you know? And I paid for it. And like he got back to the table and he was like, all right, are we ready to go? And I was like, yeah, let's go. And then like, he looked at the lady, like, you know, for the check. And she was like, nope, he paid for it. And I was like, you threw me under the bus like that? And he literally looked at me and was like, no, no, no. And like, told the translator, like, go back and get this figured out. Like, no.
Whoa.
And the translator came to me and was like, hey, I need your card so they can refund you. And I was like, no. I looked at her. I was like, no, you know me, no. I'm paying this one. Let's go.
Wow.
And he was like, okay, only one though. Only one. I was like, all right, that's fine. It's the last one of the year. Like, you know, it is what it is.
I guess the moment Alek Manoah became a big leaguer right there. I think that was it.
When you big leagued Ryu on that.
Yeah, I had to pay for, you know, for one bill. But he tells me stories like when Adrian Gonzalez used to take him out, and he took Adrian for the first time to Korean barbecue, and they were eating, and Adrian Gonzalez loved it, and he paid for the bill, and Adrian Gonzalez was like, bro, don't ever do that again. So, like, wow. You know, you have some clubhouses where, you know, I got some stories of buddies that debut and then they get stuck with a $20,000, like, dinner bill. And I'm just really fortunate. I've been around really good veterans that are like, we're not going to do that to you. Like, we're going to show you the ropes. We're going to take care of you, like, this and that. Like, so when I say I'm not paying for that one at the end of this year, it doesn't mean I don't want to pay. It's just I know they won't let me pay.
As long as we can see it, that's all we need. Alec, man, we cannot thank you enough. Thanks, man. Best of luck this year.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
There it is, Alec Manoa in conversation with me and Arden. Thanks to Alec for his time. Thanks for the Jays PR team for helping us put that one together. Thanks, of course, to Nick Andrade, to Amal Delich, to Christian Ryan, all of whom play a big role in producing the episodes that you hear. So we've got more coming up. I mean, we've got another interview with another Blue Jays starting pitcher coming up on At the Letters. We have that to look forward to next week. As I mentioned before, we've also got the over-unders in the works. That's always a lot of fun. And we'll have an episode later this week where Arden and I kind of chat and discuss where things are at for the Blue Jays. So lots coming your way. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts, and check us out, of course, on YouTube as well. We are very excited to have Miller Lite back on as a sponsor this year. Miller Lite, the original light beer, they are bringing you At the Letters. And that's all very exciting because we have a lot in the works for this season. That's it for today. Thanks so much for listening in. Again, we've got lots coming your way, and we will talk to you soon.